suggestive of scant interest in the contents. I couldn't pretend I wasn't annoyed. The shop, cavern-like if not cavernous, was not ever busy, and I was used to having the books in their haphazard stacks and misaligned rows to myself. The overcoat's extreme proximity, and the way it backed into me without revealing its owner's face, bordered on the uncomfortable, if not outright rude. I took a grudging sideways step, attempting to refocus on the grubby shelving and the broken, battered spines thereon. But some subliminal cue convinced me that I was being observed, and so, annoyed by the sense of covetous eyes on the growing hoard of paperbacks in the crook of my arm, I made the error of taking a further, this time unguarded, glance at him. And mistake indeed it proved to be. I had read his body, or, at the very least, his posture, all wrong. He was facing me, poised and ready to seize his opportunity. It might have been a smile, or perhaps something else, small and dark and malicious, that rustled through the hair around his mouth. "It's that one you want," he said. "Nice little seller. Best unit you'll find in this place. Best you'll find along the high street." He eased the hardback from the shelf. The tatty dust jacket, its edges nicked and torn, bore the title in an archaic angular font: World War II Destroyers. Below that, the surname of the author, Jacobs, was just legible. Its once red lettering faded away to prosthesis pink. 50 or 60 for that, maybe as much as 75 if the wrapper there was in better shape. And after what they'll ask for it in here. He whistled quietly, and there again went the agile little rodent through his beard. From his hand movement, I understood that by wrapper he meant the dust jacket. He had an air of expertise. Everything about him was persuasive, high-quality antique, from the dirty grey of his peppery oiled hair to the papery sun-worn skin around his eyes. His clothing conjured a distant suggestion of armour or carapace. Wool and leather and silk, all top-end, perhaps even hand-tailored, and all lightly soiled. And his smell, a tight, high blend of cold, dead tobacco mixed with something like turpentine, an old, desiccated sweat. "I'd take it myself, but I've done all right this morning already. Got a vanload of academic texts from a house clearance job parked just up the hill. Routledge, Verso, OUP, all tight and tidy. I like to help the younger generation. Lambs haven't much chance, not the way it's all going, handcart-wise." I was unsure whether by younger generation, Harris was referring to me as an admittedly rather novice book dealer, or to the students upon whom he intended to unleash his stock of dog-eared academic disquisitions. But his having sized me up so assiduously felt something of an embarrassment. I imagined myself inconspicuous, the nature of my business in the shop opaque, simply a customer, perhaps a keen reader. In truth, the books I was searching out were units to be bought and sold. The internet had, at least for a while, when all of this happened, made doing so a viable money-making operation. "Go on, lad," Harris urged. "Someone will snap it up within the month. I guarantee it. For the plates alone, if nothing else. Take the blessed thing." I didn't want to. The shabbiness of the book didn't appeal to me any more than did the odd little man pushing it forward. But I wasn't gathering for my personal collection, and if I was making just a fifth of the profit he promised on every book I sold, well, "There'll be something another time you can do for me," he said. For some reason, I found that reassuring. Perhaps because it felt familiar. Something I'd heard before, or a deal I'd already struck. As I reached for the book, though, I noticed with a twinge of revulsion that his middle finger had wrapped around it an old fabric plaster, its pinkness transmuted to the dirty grey of a putty rubber used to stipple charcoal. I thought that I could just...